Duology Theater was made possible by producer Nolan Matten. Thank you, Nolan. It was also made possible by contributions from listeners like you.
Man, well, we're all in our own separate isolation chambers.
We are. I am not wearing pants.
Riding out the apocalypse.
Yeah, and we're gonna get real cozy. You know, we're gonna get real chill.
If you remember, Tom, it's a very sunny apocalypse.
Yeah, is it sunny where you are?
It's sunny where I am. It's been raining its ass off, but
yeah, no, it is rainy where I. It's nice and rainy. It's cozy. We're all chill. Remember, Tom, this is about being chill. This is a chill podcast.
This is Chillcast.
Chillcast. It's actually Duology Theater.
Ooh.
Folks.
That's right. That's right. I forgot the name of this podcast until you just said it.
Welcome to Duology Theater. I'm one of your hosts, David Bell.
I'm a second one of your hosts, Tom Ryman.
Yeah. And, what we're doing, folks, we're just, you know, we're relaxing. We're kicking back. Yeah.
We're taking it easy.
We're stretching for time while we remember who the person who paid for this was. Mm-hmm. Nolan Matten.
Nolan Matten.
Boy, Nolan, thank you so much. This is actually Nolan Matten's. He presented it. I just realized that we have an intro that mentions him anyway.
Yeah, so we do. I don't know what the hell you were doing this for.
It's okay.
You're embarrassing me.
It's chill, Tom.
You're embarrassing all of us.
It's chill. Anywho, welcome to the this month's second episode of Duology Theater, where we cover two movies, a duology, some would say.
Right. This show is about talking about a series of movies that consist of only two films.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll cover the first one kind of as a standalone thing, and then once we get to the second, we can kind of talk about the series as a whole and our impressions. And we are today talking about The Raid 2.
Mm.
If you haven't yet, you should go back and watch listen to
you can our watch. Episode. You can watch whatever's in front of your face while you're filling your ears with the sounds of us talking about The Raid.
You can listen to us cover The Raid. I think if you've
while
seen these
you're
movies,
watching The Raid, you could do that.
That's true. I think if you've seen these movies, you know that they aren't. The Raid 2 isn't a direct continuation of the first Raid. It is in terms of timeline, but story, it's unconnected.
It's very, very different, and that's because, as I mentioned in the first episode, this movie was actually written first.
It was,
and they didn't have the money to make it, so they wrote Gareth Evans, the writer director, wrote The Raid to sort of drum up excitement and get investors and stuff. And then they made The Raid 2, and he just sort of rewrote it mildly to connect it to that first film.
Tom, I remember you saying something in that episode. I remember you saying that you preferred this movie to the first one.
That's correct.
That's interesting, because I feel the exact opposite.
Okay.
I mean, they're both very good movies. Don't get me wrong.
Yes. Yeah, we should say that right up front. These are two extremely good films.
Yeah, I think what it is, though, that I had trouble with in this movie is that this is very much not just a martial arts film.
This is a crime. This is like Heat.
Yes.
This is like a crime drama.
Yeah, and honestly, I didn't need that. I think what I like about the first Raid is that its strength is, of course, the fight scenes. And I would say the fight scenes in this are definitely more advanced than the ones in that one, because we have car chases and
baseball Batman. Awesome. He's in the first movie.
Is he? Not with the baseball.
Not with a baseball bat. He's one of the random dudes that attacks them in the drug lab scene.
Okay. And so obviously the fighting is the fight scenes are way better. But I really, really like the simplicity of the first one and didn't need all this crime story stuff.
Well, See, I'm going to counter that with saying if they just made another one that was another simple story with awesome fight scenes, it would be exactly the same as the first film, so why make it?
I agree. I agree. And I like this movie
a lot. I like that this one... Oh, yeah, no. I just like the first one
better because it's simpler.
Yeah, I appreciate the complexity of this one, and I like that it's blown out. It's like I look at it as the difference between John Wick and John Wick 2.
Sure.
Where it's like, I like John Wick a lot, I like John Wick 2 a lot, and it's hard for me to decide which one I like more, because John Wick 2, as well as The Raid 2, they're both movies where the director is sort of, has gotten better, and is learning to extend himself in ways.
Oh, for sure. Because
The Raid 2 is a gorgeous movie.
Yeah. It's very pretty.
Yeah. I appreciated getting to see, there's a lot of different locations. It just feels so much bigger. It's such a different experience from watching The Raid. And
well,
I appreciate
money.
That.
They have money.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They have money. Yeah.
This, they don't have much more money. This had a budget of $4.5 million.
Well, the difference between $1 million and $4 million is a lot.
Yeah. It's like four times as much.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking about in terms of the scope. If you're making a movie for $1 million and then you're making a movie for $4 million, your scope changes incredibly.
No, I was surprised by that actually, because it felt like it had a bigger budget. But now thinking about it, it's like they have multiple locations and stuff, but it's still not, you know, you don't have to have CGI or anything. Mm-hmm. In fact, they like to avoid CGI in weird ways in this.
That car chase.
Oh, that car chase. You've probably, if people have seen the GIF, I think people might not connect the two things, but there's a shot in The Raid where a camera flies through a car. It goes in through one window and it goes into the car, and we watch the action in the car, and then it goes out the other window. And the way they did that is they had three cameramen. They had one outside of the car on one side. They had one in the car dressed as a car seat, so you won't notice him.
Mm-hmm.
And he grabs the camera, and then he passes it to the final cameraman who's outside the car on the other side. And it is a seamless shot. It's fucking beautiful.
Yeah, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's so, like some 1917 bullshit.
Yeah, it's really about with budget, like they could pay for different environments to do crazy shit. They don't spend it on two, like that car chase is actually, it's a pretty modest car chase in terms of like explosions or big car stunts. Like there's some crashes, of course, but I can see why it doesn't have to be that. Like The Raid doesn't have to have much of a budget.
No, it really doesn't.
Which is weird for an action film, but like, you just need to pay the stuntmen good. It's a stuntman movie, you know? So that's all you need.
Yeah, and the stunts and the fighting in this movie are amazing, just like they are in the first one.
Yes, they are.
So I see this in terms of, as the series as a whole, like I see this movie as like more mature. Like it's definitely, mm-hmm, like seeing The Raids, like, oh, this director and these fighters and these performers are really good, and then The Raid 2 is like, this is them maturing and getting better at what they're doing and expanding what they're doing. It's like the perfect progression, I think.
Right.
And it makes me sad that we won't see a Raid 3.
We won't, will we? I saw an article about that. Not yet, at least. Not never.
Not never, but definitely not for a while.
Yeah. He can move on and do something else that's amazing.
Yeah, he's making Gangs of London for HBO, I think.
Oh, okay. Is that going to have martial arts?
I'm not sure. I thought it was. In the last episode, I misspoke and said that a lot of the performers from The Raid was going to be in that. But after we recorded that, I double-checked myself, and that's not accurate.
That's a shame.
It does have Cole Meany in it.
Oh, good. Okay.
So,
well,
we're fine.
Yeah, he'll do martial arts for sure.
Right. He's going to be windmilling through the air with his with his legs, just like helicopter blades.
Oh yeah.
Like kicking people straight into the Atlantic Ocean.
He's going to be transporting motherfuckers straight to hell.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
That's what he does. Kick their souls out of their bodies.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Combe. God, it's going to be the summer of Combe. Mm-hmm. Combe's back, baby. Everybody pass it on.
was the summer of Komini.
The plot of this.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see if I can figure it out.
Sure. I have seen this movie upwards of 20 times, so I can help you out when you stumble. When you stumble carrying this potato.
What's Ico the cop's Uwe's. Name?
Rama.
Rama is, this takes place a couple hours after the first film.
Mm-hmm.
And Rama...
Yeah, like later that night, yeah.
Yeah, Rama is asked to go undercover for unrelated reasons?
No, they're still trying to get Reza, who was the guy that was responsible... Right, they talked about him in the first movie. He was funding both the bad guy and the crooked lieutenant. And in this scene, they fucking blow the crooked lieutenant away.
They sure do.
They take the injured guy.
You don't see his face. Do you see his face?
No, you don't, because I assume they didn't get the actor back.
Yeah, that's why that was one of those things that confused me, because I was like, wait, who is that guy? And I just was like, I assume it's that guy. It's Vincent D'Onofrio, but...
Right, it's supposed to be him, but I think because he's so briefly... He's just in it to get blown away. I assume they just didn't bother to cast him.
Yeah. And they say, okay, you're going to go undercover now, and we're going to put you in jail.
Mm-hmm. And they take the injured guy, Bowo, away.
Right.
And
if I was Rama, I would say
no. He's like, watch
your
ass. Right. He should.
Yes. I would say, hey.
They convince him because they tell him, hey, this guy, Bejo, that's working his way up through Reza's ranks, killed your brother. Like, he killed Andy. That's how the movie starts.
Yes,
if you remember.
With the brother getting executed.
Is Andy getting killed in the fucking casino scene in the Indonesian equivalent of a cornfield? I'm not sure if it's sugar cane, but it's like this huge field of green.
Yeah. Would you? I was weighing this. Is it smart to dig a grave on the farm like road? Because that feels like it's dirt that's been packed down, right?
Yeah.
And so one. It's hard dig. It's a hard dig.
Well, you're not going to dig in the crops.
Yeah, I guess you're not.
That's a dumber
but
idea.
But I would clear out a space in the crops or something. Because I guess what you could do is you'd bury them and then you drive over it a bunch. Because people are going to notice that. But at the same time, it's a farm. So people would be like, oh, they had to bury something or they dug something up.
Right, it's just a bump in the road. Like, whatever.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of the smartest place to bury
somebody in a farm is on the road. Because the cars driving over it will continually compact the dirt down.
Yeah,
until it looks like
it's just... Yeah. Yep. Good on them. Yeah, that was that's a good way to start it. It's shocking. This movie, and I think a lot of sequels do this, so this isn't like a bad thing. This movie kind of resets everything. Or kind of...
Right.
It's people complain about it when it's like Alien 3. Because, you know, the first movie is all about surviving and getting out, and then the brother is immediately killed. But that's... I don't know. Felt like sort of the point.
Yeah, I think it's more forgivable in this.
Yeah. He did cool martial arts in the first one.
He did.
And that's the weird, like, they have no shortage of people who can do awesome fighting. But when they kill someone like that at the beginning, I was just like, aw, he can fight. He can do fight stuff. But whatever. It's a good idea. It's a very good idea for the opening.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like he had to come up because, like, of what you just said, where it's like Rama decides to go undercover for some reason. That's the reason. Like, they had to give him a reason.
It's
like, well, we'll just kill the brother.
Yeah, and they sure.
I'm sure he doesn't exist in the original script that he wrote because, again, this movie was written before the raid.
It's a really shocking opening and then it goes straight to the.
Title. It's very effective.
Yeah.
This man, Gareth Evans is so good.
He's very good.
He's very good.
he's very, very good.
Yeah, and man, this movie, I love The Raid 2. I really do.
It's got some amazing stuff in it.
Oh, yeah. The prison yard fight?
Yeah. Yeah, he goes to prison for two goddamn years. And there's the bathroom fight. Which is cool because they had a false wall. You've probably seen that in behind the scenes because the cameraman has to get into the stall for some shots. Yeah. So they keep moving the wall back and forth without us seeing it.
Yeah, he does a lot of continuous takes in the movie.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of really clever things to get around it. And in the stall scene, it's Rama in the stall waiting for this. Like, he knows he's about to get bum rushed by a bunch of dudes.
Oh, yeah.
And it keeps moving from behind him to, like, beside him, like, profile, and then in front of him. So as the camera's moving, they keep moving that false right. wall that's behind him. That's the back of the stall.
Yeah. You can see that in a lot of other movies. Yeah. It's just, I always love it when it happens. One of my favorites is in the George Clooney directed Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. There's a scene where Sam Rockwell is talking on the phone with someone, and they wanted to keep it as a continuous take, but they wanted to show the guy he was talking to. So he like paces in his living room and then paces back, and beyond the wall is the guy at his desk, like in another place.
Mm-hmm.
And so they built the set, and basically when he paces one way, they'd pull the wall to reveal him. And it's one of those things that's like, you could have just done a split screen. But ultimately, it's almost cheaper because it's like you don't need two locations.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very small set you need of that guy. So yeah, just build like another like a desk and a couple walls.
Yeah, it saves you a lot of money.
Yeah,
because two locations means two days of shooting.
Yeah, so I love it because it's the things that you don't notice, and in this one it's so simple. And again, it's been done in other things, but then they just it sort of sets up the spirit of how they shot this thing.
Yeah, it's real. It's still, because again, it's a blown out film and a blown out budget from the first movie, but it's still a pretty small budget for what they're doing. Like,
oh yeah, for sure.
Try to imagine Michael Mann making Heat for $4 million. Yeah. Like it's impossible. But Gareth Evans and his crew of very talented performers make it happen. And there's the prison yard fight where they simulate, they go all 1917 and simulate a few continuous takes.
Yeah.
It's that fight real is great. Good.
That fight, the only
fight is nuts.
Yeah. It's a great setting. Just that square yard, bunch of rain going down, and just him taking on everybody.
Yeah, and they're all slipping
everybody.
In the mud.
Yeah.
Like they work it into the choreography that they're slipping in the mud.
Yeah. Oh, I love shit like that. That's like the classic scene in The Transporter where Jason Statham pours oil all over himself and goes shirtless.
It's exactly like that.
It's exactly like the classic scene in The Transporter. It's a great fight. It's that establishes that he is he protecting the boss's son in that scene?
Right. He goes to the point is he's going to prison to spy on an Indonesian crime boss. And he's spying on that boss's son who's in prison. And I can't remember what the son's name is. We always call him Space Dandy.
Okay. Why?
Because there's an anime called Space Dandy. And he looks exactly like the main character in that anime, whom is named Space Dandy.
Yeah, I was going to say he looks like an anime character for sure.
Yeah, he looks amazing.
Yeah. He's... It's right on the line where you're like, is he in a disguise? This whole
right.
movie,
like he's got like a pompadour. Like he looks incredible.
He doesn't look like a real person.
No, he doesn't.
He
looks like a mannequin brought to life.
Yeah, but that actor's killing it throughout the film.
No, he's great. He's amazing. He's one of the best actors in the movie.
Yeah,
he has one of the most compelling arcs in the film.
Yeah, for sure. Because he's not on the side of our hero ever.
But no, but he thinks
on the
he's,
side of
he
the
thinks,
bad guys by the end.
No, he thinks Rama's his friend, and then ultimately, when Rama kills him in the end, he's like thankful.
Yeah,
because he's let everything go to shit. He's killed his father.
Yeah, he ruined everything.
Right, he realizes he's been used by Bejo, and then so when Rama finally kills him, he just accepts it.
What did I miss about the tattoo connection?
Oh, he notices that...
I know that he notices they have the same tattoo as the guy he killed.
Yes. Well, he injures that guy. And then later on...
The guy, the throat slitting? He only injured that guy?
No. That guy tries to kill Space Dandy in the prison yard.
Got it.
That swole-ass motherfucker who's in some other related films that these guys do, like The Night Comes for Us.
This is sort of why that guy needed a crazy pompadour and stuff, is that the prison yard and the car chase and stuff, the only problem is, like, the prison yard, it's all muddy and it's rainy, and so I was just like, I'm having trouble telling people apart. And then the car chase was the same, because they're all in black cars. Right. And it was just like, you only need to track which car am the one I'm rooting for.
Yeah, you only need to track three people in the prison yard, and it's Rama, Space Dandy, and Swole Dude.
Right.
And then in the car chase, you only need to track Rama and crap, I forget his name. He's the guy that's in the VHS 2 segment. He's the guy that you find out is an undercover cop and has been deep undercover for years.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't impossible. It was just like, it's, you know, visually it was a little tougher.
A lot is happening in both of those sequences. Yeah, a lot is happening. But you really only need to track those characters.
Yeah.
So Rama beats Swole Dude to save Space Dandy, which like makes him get in good with the Indonesian crime boss. Later on, Bejo takes those guys to Space Dandy. He's like, these are the guys who tried to kill you in prison. So Space Dandy later spots that both Swole Dude and Bejo have the same tattoo.
I just put it together, meaning that he let that guy...
Right.
He wanted
sent,
that guy
They
to
worked
kill.
For him, and they worked for Bejo, and Bejo sent them to kill Space Dandy because he was trying to put all this in motion.
Right. Like, it's weird that he thought that the... Bejo's the main bad guy. Weird. It's weird that he thought that guy would have his best interest. He is so obviously a villain. He's got a cane.
Right. Right, he's encouraging them to go to war with the Yakuza.
Yeah, it's like, why would that guy ever have his back?
Right, like Bejo's whole thing is he's kind of like Sheev Palpatine-ing it, where he's like surreptitiously being like, "Yeah, you should go to war with the Yakuza because they did this and they're never going to respect your strength." But really, he's trying to get those two gangs to wipe each other out so he can move in the power vacuum and be the big boss.
Like, yeah. And it's like, why wouldn't he? I mean, like, the character Space Dandy is, you know, he's supposed to be dumb and impulsive. It's just, it's one of those things where it's like, if someone was like, "Hey, kill your dad," I'd be like, why?
I would need like a long list of really compelling reasons before I killed my dad.
It feels like if you want me to kill my dad, then you might kill me.
Right. And like,
because loyalty doesn't matter to you.
Right, like secret Nazi would have to be somewhere on that list. Yes. Like it would have to be a real compelling list.
Oh yeah, it would have to. Like, yeah, it would have to be like he's going to endanger other people's lives if you don't kill him. Yeah. You know, or it can be you can take over his crime thing. Mm-hmm. But like, can you really? I don't know. Yeah, it's that's enough for him to realize, because it's like, those motherfuckers have matching tattoos. Be great if one of them had like one half of a best friend's heart necklace,
right,
and he had the other half. Yeah. He was like, wait a fucking second.
There is a good moment though in that scene where Bejo takes all those guys, including Swole Dude, to Space Dandy's restaurant. And it's like, I'm offering these guys up to you who tried to kill you in prison as a peace offering.
Yeah.
And Space Dandy's cutting their throats one by one. Swole Dude looks over at Bejo, and they exchange like a meaningful glance where it's like
and he's
Bejo's
like, sorry,
like,
man.
It's like I'll take care of your family.
Oh.
Like, because Swole Dude doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
And he could. But he looks over at Bejo, and Bejo gives him this look that's like, I'll take care of you.
He could,
I'll take care of your people.
And like, he should?
He should, but like...
I get... Oh, okay, hold on. You're right. It's hard to identify an I'll take care of your family look. I didn't know that was a type of look, but I know what you're talking about. It's like a, hey, man, please work with me
here. You watch the exchange. He looks over at him, and he's like... betrayed, and then Bejo gives him this look, and then they go back to Swole Dude, and he like accepts it.
Yeah, no, you're right.
So something definitely passes between them, and that's what I inferred from
that. And you're probably right. Well, that makes the most sense, because I was going to say that at that point they're going to kill you either way. So at that point I'd be like, you know what, fuck your plan, I'm just going to spill the beans. But if it's like, hey, I'll also kill your family, it's mm-hmm. just like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well played, sir. Slit my throat. That scene is incredible.
Slit my throat with a box cutter.
Yeah, when he's fucking
ballroom from the fucking Shining.
Yeah. When he starts to slit that guy's throat, and then he like stops to talk to the guy a little bit.
Yeah, it's
brutal.
Then
he's like, and finishes. Yeah, I think that's Well, I was scared for a second that they were going to try to make him good at the end when he notices he was betrayed. And it's no, that's not going to happen. He's well past that.
No, he's a guy. He's not a maniac. It's not exactly Othello, but it's a guy who's engineered his own destruction.
Yes. Yeah, so, we're watching himself destruct. And you see it in every scene with him, the way he treats women, the way he like puts he gets so angry and like causes a scene, and he ultimately just keeps shooting himself in the foot every decision.
He allows them to kill a family friend.
Yep.
Who is Mad Dog first movie.
Why can't he survive these?
I don't know, but Mad Dog fucking kills a fucking 80 people in that scene.
He's the equivalent. It's so weird.
That's an amazing scene.
Yeah, and it's like, I just want him. That's all I want in these movies. And I think they know it's almost like fun to just give us a little bit of him.
Yeah.
Every time, and then he has to die.
He's also doing the choreography. Him and Ika Uwais are doing the choreography.
Yeah, I assumed. It's him. It's almost like a cameo.
Yeah. And he's apparently some kind of... I'm going to look it up as we're talking to make sure I get it right.
He needs to act more.
He's apparently like a special forces dude.
That checks out. He clearly has talents that are... Like, he's more valuable as a fight choreographer, right? Mm-hmm. But I kind of want to see him do a movie where he doesn't fight and it's just like a drama.
He's a good actor.
Yeah. And again, I know that's like sort of a waste of his talents, but I think he could do it. I think he could do a really good performance in a movie where he plays, because there's a scene where he's like talking to an ex-wife about giving her money and like she's mad at him and he's like really pathetic. And I'm like, I want Marriage Story. But this guy.
Yeah. He's not a special forces guy, but he is like a worldwide trainer. Like he's trained people in Penchaks a lot in Belgium, France, and the Netherlands.
You think we could rent him for a day? You think we could get a couple hundred bucks?
Could we rent Yayan? I don't know. Yayan Rian? I don't think we could.
I don't think we could. He probably costs more than we can afford.
just show me how to do one kick, man. Just show me how to do one kick. But the scene where it's basically Space Dandy hires a bunch of guys to kill him, and then they blame it on the Yakuza.
Yeah.
To start a gang war between them. But that scene in that nightclub is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Also, Gareth Evans is one of the random white douchebags in that scene.
You know what?
At the bar.
I kind of suspected that he was one of them. I was like, I bet he's in here. And I know what he looks like. I probably could have spotted him.
Yeah, yeah. He's one of the guys at the bar holding a beer bottle.
That sounds about right.
Yep.
Yeah, that's... that's a great scene.
It's an amazing scene.
Yeah.
Every action scene in this movie is incredible. Oh, and it's like 100%. It's just like the first film, except it's like blown out and it has more story and more drama. And
it's basically the action scenes are a little farther apart.
Exactly. That's the only problem.
Yeah.
Well, that's not even a problem for me because
it's 2.5 hours. So
it's long, but like we said in the first movie, these guys are all good actors.
Yeah.
So it's like the dramatic, it's not like a movie where you're like, oh, I hate the scenes where they're just talking. Like, the scenes where they're just talking are, like, some of the best parts of the movie.
Yeah. I think they could have tightened it up still.
Maybe a little bit, but...
Just because I don't think a movie like this needs to be 2.5 hours. I think two hours would have been fine.
I sort of love the idea that they sat down and were like, you know what? Let's make an epic fucking crime martial arts movie.
Yeah. I mean, what helps is What helps is that some of the best action is near the end. So you don't, like, I never spent the movie being like, oh, when is this going to end? Because by the time you might ask yourself that question, you're watching a dude fight a dude in a kitchen, and you're like, I don't give a fuck when this ends.
Oh, my God, that kitchen fight. Okay. Yeah. That kitchen fight that he has with that guy who's, I don't know the actor's name. He never gets a character name.
Yeah.
I think they just call him the assassin. He's the guy that's in John Wick 3 with Yayan, Mad Dog. It's Mad Dog and him that are fighting John Wick in that last scene.
Oh.
And that kitchen fight scene is fucking amazing.
It's so good.
It's so goddamn good.
It's incredibly brutal. That's another thing. This movie, I think...
It's very brutal. Like
I'm not sure if it's more brutal than the first The Raid.
I think it is.
Well, I think what makes it seem more brutal to me is that there's more weapons.
There's more situational violence. Like when he burns that guy's face on a grill. Yeah.
That was bad, but what really... I mean, and they did something similar in the first movie, but when he fucking... When Mad Dog slams that guy's face against the brick and then slides his face down.
Oh, God,
and they do
yeah,
just
Jesus.
It's all about the sound design for that yeah. shit. And the sound oh, yeah. they do, I'm just like, oh, fuck you. You didn't have to do that.
It's, yeah, my God.
Yeah.
And then in that fight scene, he's got, the assassin has a bunch of harpy knives, which if you guys don't know, they're curved, they're short curved knives.
Okay.
But his are serrated. Like it's the same knife that Anthony Hopkins cuts, what's his name? I can't remember. It's the same knife Anthony Hopkins used to cut
in Hannibal.
The Italian inspector's stomach open in Hannibal. Yes. Yeah. It's a harpy knife. So he has a fight scene against Rama in a kitchen where he's got two of those.
Yeah. Which is too many.
Every time he's swinging it, and then like Rama gets one of them, so they're having a curved, serrated knife fight. So every time they're throwing their arms, you're like cringing because you know if it connects, it's gonna be devastating. Yeah. And every time they connect, it's devastating.
Oh yeah. What was your favorite fight in this?
Oh man, probably Rama's. It's a toss up between Mad Dog in the nightclub and Rama's fight with Baseball Batman and Hammer Girl.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think my favorite moments was... Hammer Girl was great, don't get me wrong.
She's but great.
Baseball Bat Guy, I couldn't stop watching him. I couldn't take
amazing.
My eyes. And I think what it is that weapon. It's such a brutal... He was doing such fun like baton flips with that thing. And then the killing blow was always just like, I'm going to just one hit in the face. And
I'm just
going to
hit you in the
set.
Fucking skull with my baseball
I'm
bat.
Curious what they used for that bat because he's making contact.
It's rubber, I'm sure.
It's got to be. But like, it's got to be pretty hard rubber too because it's not.
It doesn't like, flop around. That's
it
true.
It doesn't flop around. It's a very sturdy. I was very curious about that. I'm sure I could look it up, but I'm going to not do that because I'm lazy. But his bat shit was great. I loved his bit with the baseball.
Yeah, where he's like, go grab the baseball.
Yeah, both like, him and Hammer Girl, like, I want to know what very specific events fucked them up as kids.
Right, because they're brother and sister, and she has one eye that's clearly been scarred by acid. Like, I want a prequel movie about them.
Yeah, I want a lot of stuff about them. I guess the point is, of course, you're like, what the fuck are... What's their deal? And they're just designed in a way to be, you know, mysterious. But what the fuck?
And I can speak to that why you're more impressed with Baseball Batman. It's because he was already part of this fight team. Like I said, he's in the Raid 1.
Oh, well, I guess what I was meaning to say is that they're both extremely good. It's the weapon of choice. The baseball bat itself was extremely compelling to me. The hammers are fucking... That subway scene is incredible.
Yeah, the subway scene is
nuts.
Where
she's tearing dudes up. Because that's the thing about the hammers is that they're like regular, you know, they're Tim the Tool Man hammers. Like, they're just hammers. And you think about a hammer and you're like, oh, I don't want to get hit with that hammer. And then you realize, oh, wait, the other side is way worse. Because she's like dragging that claw on people.
Yeah, she's fucking people with that claw.
Yeah.
The actress's name is Julie Estelle, and she's been in a number of the other movies that this team does.
Nice. Like, it was nice to see a lady.
Yeah. Like,
they need more
the
ladies.
Comes for Us and Headshot.
Yeah.
But she learned martial arts for this film.
Oh, whoa, shit.
Like, Gareth Evans was so impressed with her audition that he cast her, and she trained with fucking Mad Dog, and
she
Mad Dog taught her martial arts. Yep.
Oh, that's great.
She learned martial arts from Mad Dog.
That's great.
And she's great.
Yeah, she should keep it up, because holy shit.
Yeah, if you guys haven't seen Headshot or The Night Comes for Us, they're both on Netflix, and it's the same stunt team. It's a Gareth Evans co-director from VHS2 directs both of them. I can't remember his name at this moment, but they both star Iko Uwais. They're full of crazy ass fight scenes and violence. They're amazing. They're amazing movies.
Yeah.
And it's all the same people.
So it's mesmerizing to watch these people work.
It really is. In Headshot, Baseball Batman plays a guy that uses a collapsible baton, and it's fucking brutal.
Ooh.
Like, he destroys people with this collapsible baton.
They really love having creative weapons, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's like Jackie Chan, where Jackie Chan would get even crazier with that. But, like, they appreciate the fact that it's just like, let's see what we can do with
a
couple of hammers. Fuck it.
Right, a couple of hammers. Or, like, give a guy who knows how to use a staff, give him a baseball bat and watch how much of a problem that is.
Yeah, that's a real problem.
Yeah.
You should give him his ball back when he hits it.
You should give
every
him whatever
time.
He asks for.
It's so funny when he asks for the baseball bat he keeps hitting it to people and it's killing them with the baseball.
Right.
And
he
then if there's someone else there, he's just like, give me the ball back. And he acts like he's been so wronged when he asks for the ball back. Like, he's always like, give me the ball back. And it's like, fuck you, man.
I also like his characterization.
Yeah. I would grab that ball and run. I would be like, fuck you, you're never getting this ball.
Well, just like, again, speaking to how not only is this an amazing stunt team, they're also amazing performers. Like, he does a lot of characterization with very few lines, and a lot of it comes from the fact that he just drags the bat while he's walking.
Oh, and it makes this like rhythm?
Yep.
Yeah. God damn. Yeah, up the stairs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he doesn't give a fuck if people hear him coming. He doesn't give much of a fuck in general.
Nope. Neither him nor Hammer Girl seem to give very many fucks.
I want both of them to fight with the Avengers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Hawkeye would be like, I have a bow and arrow. And this guy would be like, yeah, well, I use baseballs and I'm killing more people than you.
Yeah. I'm killing all of the Chitauri with this fucking Eastman aluminum baseball bat. You jackass. You fucking Hawkeye.
Yeah. Go fight the fucking sheriff of Nottingham. Fuck you, Hawkeye.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Go kill some witches, you douche hammer.
Yeah. I feel like we've barely talked about this movie.
What else are we going to say? I mean,
it's basically like an inner, it's not a Guy Ritchie film or a Tarantino, but it has the,
not at all,
the plot of one. I would say it has the, oh, this guy is trying to fuck over this guy and this guy is trying to do this and then this guy betrays him. But it's not, it's not a Tarantino film or anything. It's just, it's like that structure.
It's a structure,
a
like
martial
it's a real,
arts film.
Right. It's a real complicated maze of betrayals.
Right.
And like secret plots. But the difference between this movie and like a Guy Ritchie movie or a Quentin Tarantino movie is that this movie treats it like a serious drama.
Right. Yeah. And it's not shot like it. It's not jokey.
It's not shot like it at all. No.
Rama's really got to call his wife.
He does. Yeah. I don't think there's a single joke in this film. I mean, outside of stuff that's like kind of like situationally funny, Batman asks for his ball back.
Yeah, I certainly laughed when I saw the girl pull out two hammers. It's not the same kind of funny as like in, you know, a comedy. It's more just like, whoa, okay, that's what we're gonna do now. All right, it's how more outrageous can it get situation. It's great. I mean, these guys would solve a lot of problems if they just used guns. I think I said that in the first one.
That guns are very hard to get in other countries that aren't America.
Right. I keep forgetting that. It's a very American take.
That's why these
I'm watching
dudes
this
are
movie,
wielding
like,
fucking
Taco
wild
Bell on my
weapons,
couch, and like, I'm like, I could get these guys. I just need a gun.
Well, right. That's why these guys are carrying things like saws and sickles and shit. It's because it's like, wait, whatever we can grab, man.
I want just one character to be like Segway and a gun. Just one guy rolling around on a Segway.
I mean, there's guns in the movie.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there's the shotgun. They love that, the slow reaching for guns scenario. They did that in The Raid, too. And in this one, they have where they're at the nightmare warehouse where they're shooting porn. When they're shooting strap-on porn.
That guy is the guy who's the cult leader in VHS 2.
Oh, yep. You're right.
That little ball of lunacy.
Yeah.
That guy's amazing.
I'm still wondering what this world is. I guess it's just our world.
I think it's just our world.
Yeah, it's just our world with a lot of people.
The pornography they were making in that hell warehouse absolutely exists.
Oh, yeah, of course. I just mean, like, everybody existed in abandoned warehouses a lot. Like, wherever they go, it's just be like some guy standing.
It's probably the same set that they just kept redressing.
I think it's after the car chase or after one of the car sequences, they like park in what looks like Chernobyl. It's just like abandoned warehouses left and right.
They park in a blasted landscape. Yeah.
And then baseball bat guy goes upstairs and it's the two guys that he attacks are just standing in the middle of an empty warehouse. And I was like, what's going on up here? Is this where they live? Do they work here?
Maybe he's got an office there.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of giant money abandoned on rent. Warehouses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so the last one is the little wiener shooting at him, and he murders him. And I like the ending where he's just fought a bunch of guys. He's fought his way to this guy. Right. Did Rama he solve has... the case, by the way? It doesn't feel like he solved the case.
He solved enough of the case because the cops are on their way.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I feel like he's going to get a talking to where they're like, man, you went undercover for 2 years and then you just murdered everyone right at the end.
Yeah. I do like that ending, though, because you don't hear what's being said. Like, the Yakuza shows up after Rama has killed all of Beisho's men. And they're talking. You can see that they're talking to each other. Like, the Yakuza boss's son is talking to him. And you can infer from their body language what's being said. Like, basically, the Yakuza just offered him a job.
Right. Oh, yeah. And then he says, no, I'm done.
He says, no, I'm done. Yep. And that's the end of the movie.
Which is what you say.
Yep.
It's a good, it's a shame there's not going to be a third, but it's a fine ending for this character.
Yeah.
Of just being like, look, I got to go take a bath. That's what I want to see. I want to see him take a bath and order some fucking pizza and just have a night.
Yeah, just crush, have a cheat night. Crush a pizza.
He really
needs
some
hamburgers, Rama. Jesus.
Yeah, he's had a tough time. He's really committed to being a cop.
Yeah? He really believes in it. Well, I mean, again...
But again, I don't think he's a great cop either.
Well, they had to give us the huge offering in the beginning where they kill his brother. That's why he's so invested in it.
Yeah, yeah. I just mean his methods aren't great. Like, I wonder if he beat people up, like if he did like traffic cop stuff, if he would keep beating people up.
And well, he never actually crosses a line except when he burns that guy's face with a grill and then realizes he's a cop. And then it's like, oh man, this is one of Reza's guys because Reza controls the cops.
Yeah, that was great when he realized he's a cop.
Yeah. Like he's constantly, if you watch,
he's
constantly being a passive observer and trying to record information, and he never crosses the line until he gets attacked by a gang of cops.
Right. That's fair. And then he has to just murder some people. He has just to burn some faces, ruin a vacation or two of people who were dining out.
I mean, that
bringing
guy's
their
gonna,
kids.
That guy's going to die. Like he held his face to the grill for like 30 seconds.
No, yeah, that guy's not going to do good.
And he let him up and he looks like fucking Two-Face. Like that guy's going to die in the next 24 hours.
If you own that restaurant, what do you do?
Well, you get rid of that grill, first of all, and you buy a new one.
I would get a new restaurant. I would say, okay, well, this is going to be officially the Face Grill place.
Yeah.
It doesn't even matter if I replace the grill. I'd have to put a sign outside that says all new grills. Guaranteed. We replace the grills because of that thing. Like, there's no coming back from that for your business. If a guy comes into your business and grills someone's face.
Yeah.
Like, that's it for you.
It's a hard thing to bounce back from, for sure.
It's very bad for... their methods are very bad for the economy, I think.
You're just going to get a bunch of goth tourists.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would go.
Oh, yeah, I would. I would eat off the grill.
Yeah, I'd be like, is this the Face Grill place? And they'd be like, well, we replaced the grill.
Cook me something on it.
Yeah. I'd be like, oh, do you still have the grill? Did you throw it out already?
I want to taste the face.
Yeah, taste the face. That's what would be on the sign.
Yeah.
Oh, great idea. Great idea for a restaurant.
So We're still figuring the show out, but like, what? In terms of final thoughts.
Well, that I was going to get to that actually.
Okay.
I wanted to say one more thing.
Sure.
Is that I wanted to warn people, because if you rent this on Amazon, it is English dubbed, and they don't tell you until you rent it.
Fuck that.
Yeah, the dubbed voices, they were fine. They were fine, but they weren't the actors. So
no, you lose a lot. You really lose a lot.
Yeah, I watched it with the subtitles on too, and it was very interesting to see the differences. It's kind of whack that Amazon would have a dubbed version and not like have any other options, because it's like they always have other options. What the fuck?
Yeah, they usually let you choose.
There was no original like option where you could choose the original language. It was just you're watching this dubbed or not at all. I was like, give me my $3 back, Amazon. You trash. That's the worst thing you've ever done, Amazon.
It is pretty bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Give people the dubbed version.
Yeah.
And so tell them it's dubbed, son of a bitch.
I'll put your face on a grill, Amazon. That's what I'll do.
Then we'll get the taste of the face.
Yeah, taste that face.
Taste that face.
Okay.
Face so taste.
This was going to be my question.
Yes.
For the ending of this. Is let's talk about the two movies now. And
okay.
How do they function as a series? Do you think they work? Do you think it's balanced? Do you think it's a correct like transition from the one to the second, the escalation?
I think so.
Yes.
Like I said, I think they're such different films, but The Raid 2 is a clear and logical escalation from the first Raid.
You put it well at the beginning of this, because when I watched the first Raid, mm-hmm. I was thinking, because I knew I loved The Raid 2 when I watched the Raid for this podcast, but I was thinking like, man, I wonder how the transition's going to be. Like, obviously, these two films should exist, but are they better suited as disconnected films?
No, I think they should be connected.
Yeah, I agree, because I think it's... You got this first film that's very simple, which, again, I like slightly more, but the question is, what do you do again? And you said it yourself, is like, you can't do the same thing again. Of course you can't. You could... I think the only other option is you could do it... phrase it as like serials, as it's like another, like this is like a continuation.
Mm-hmm.
It could have also have been this cop just on another, like Die Hard style, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It could be one or the other. And they went for a continuation of the story, and that worked just fine.
It always works better.
Yeah. Well, you always want to, at least connect it. I mean, the second best Die Hard is the one that connects it to the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think these are... I wouldn't... Yeah, I think these make a good duology. I was going to say, I don't know if I'd watch them in a day.
Oh, I have. I've watched them back to back before.
I was going to say, but you can.
You absolutely can, and it's a good duology. It really is like a yin and yang, because they're so different approaches to the same thing. Like, they're two different approaches to a martial arts film.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. They're almost opposite in that sense. One mm-hmm. is, this is a very tight story. It's very simple. Get in, get out. And the other one is, we're going to weave a complicated web.
And again, I'm going to compare it to John Wick and John Wick 2, where it's the same thing, where it's like, John Wick's not a martial arts film, but it's like a gun kata practical stunts film.
Right.
And one is very contained and focused, and the other one is blown out and sprawling and gets a little bit more drama and characterization in there while still maintaining that same pedigree of stunt work. So it's like, oh, this is just the progression of this.
Yeah, and then the third one is the second one, but horses.
I love every John Wick movie.
Yeah. I would love The Raid 3 to have some horses, too. I know it's going to be a while.
Yeah, give them some horses. Put Mad Dog on a horse. Can you imagine?
Holy
shit. Can you imagine?
Oh, Mad Dog on a horse.
Yeah.
Mad Dog fighting a horse.
He would kill God if you put Mad Dog on a horse. Mm-hmm.
That should be the next one. The Raid Heaven. where he goes to get his brother. He goes to get his brother back.
He goes to free his brother from the afterlife.
Yeah, and he has a martial arts fight with God.
Sure.
Because, of course, God knows karate.
Yeah, why wouldn't he?
Yeah.
He knows everything.
So it would just be, fighting God with karate on clouds.
Yeah.
The pearly gates. Probably rip off a piece of the gate and use it to impale a guy.
Oh, hell yeah. You definitely drag a guy's face across the pearly gates.
Oh, yeah. Use those halos. Cut someone's head off with a halo.
Yeah.
Harps. Mm. You could fuck someone up with a harp.
Oh, yeah. You can bisect someone with a harp.
Yeah. Grab
it's like
them.
A cheese slicer.
Rip their wings off like you're fucking Kratos in God of War.
Just go full Kratos on heaven.
There's so many options.
Yeah.
Fucking Gareth, if you're listening.
Yeah, Gareth, go the Raid 3, fuck heaven.
Yeah. Exactly.
Destroy heaven.
Oh, yeah. And they just, they murder God and then existence disappears.
Why wouldn't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Except for Mad Dog. And he's just sitting there and he's just like, I guess I'm still here. That's cool. And I don't know what. Then he does some flips and they roll credits. It's a great film.
Yeah, it's all I need. That's really all I need.
Yeah. All right. Are you satisfied? Do you have anything else to say?
No, I think I've said everything I have to say about these two movies.
Yeah.
I'm satisfied with this particular series of duology.
Me too. I am. Good duology. I think that should be our ratings.
Are great fucking movies.
Is it good or is it bad? This is
it's good
duology.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah.
It's very good. I think both of these films are in the top 200 movies ever made.
Yeah.
Top 100 movies ever made.
Watch the Raids.
Yeah, watch the Raid Redemption and the Raid 2.
Yeah.
Because they're
confusing
pretty
titles.
Good.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. And if you want to, you don't have to, but if you want to, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's where Nolan Matten got this made.
He did.
And so, we have exclusive podcasts on there like Tom and Jeff Watch Batman and Fox Mulder is a Maniac.
Woohoo!
So check that out.
Indeed. Do those things. Those things.
What do you want to do for the next duology? Should we tell people or should we figure it out?
No.
Because I have an idea of what we're going to do.
We'll let you guys discover what it is. But it's going to be another movie franchise that only consists of two films.
Yes. Every time. No more than two.
Exactly.
No more, no less. Exactly two films.
Mm-hmm. Precisely two movies.
Yeah. I'm holding up two fingers. You can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're there. They exist.
Until only recently, that would have included National Treasure, but they're making a National Treasure 3.
There's still time. We could get them out. We can get them out first.
I think it would be disrespectful to National Treasure 3.
Yeah, okay. Because it's going to be great.
It's going to be amazing.
What is he going to steal?
I don't know. He's going to...
Our hearts?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's going to steal a telescope that shows him that Abraham Lincoln was actually an android from Jupiter.
God, I fucking hope
so. Some shit. Some
best
goddamn
movies.
Thing.
Duology Theater is brought to you by Gamefully Unemployed. Check out our cool shit at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed.